Welcome. You're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Hey there. Welcome to this edition of The Marginalian, formerly known as Brain Pickings, an online digest of interesting and inspiring articles across art, science, philosophy, creativity, children's books, and other strands of our search for truth, beauty, and meaning. All the articles in The Marginalian are written by its founder, Maria Popova, and can be found at themarginalian.org. You can now hear these articles as part of the series of podcasts from Airs LA, the audio internet reading service of Los Angeles. Today's article is titled Vaclav Havel on How to Hold Your Failure. Few things in life are more devastating than to give something your all and still fail. Not the fail better of startup culture, not the fail forward of self-help, not the failure that is childhood's fulcrum of learning, not the inspired mistakes that propel creative risk, but simply that helpless and harrowing moment when you face the abyss between your will and your powers, your values and your choices, your ideal self and your real self. It is without redemption, such failure. But it need not be without reward. Admitting failure, especially moral failure, is hard enough. To others, where the temptation to displace blame and make excuses seduces most, but most of all, to oneself. Accepting it is even harder. But it is on the other side of acceptance that the true reward of failure is to be found. That is what the great Czech playwright, essayist, and poet Vaclav Havel, born October 5, 1936, deceased December 18, 2011, explores in an extraordinary feat of soul-searching and reckoning with the human condition. Found in his letters to Olga, one of the most moving books I have ever read, the living record of his imprisonment after being found guilty on charges of subversion for his plays criticizing the communist regime and his human rights work defending the unjustly persecuted. In the summer of his 46th year, Havel recounts a moment of moral failure that shaped the course of his life. Dear Olga, 5 years ago, something happened to me that in many regards had a key significance in my subsequent life. It began rather inconspicuously. I was in detention for the first time, and one evening, after interrogation, I wrote out a request to the public prosecutor for my release. Prisoners in detention are always writing such requests, and I, too, treated it as something routine and unimportant, more in the nature of mental hygiene. I knew, of course, that my eventual release or non-release would be decided by factors having nothing to do with whether I wrote the appropriate request or not. Still, the interrogations weren't going anywhere, and it seemed proper to use the opportunity to let myself be heard. I wrote my request in a way that at the time seemed extremely tactical and cunning. While saying nothing I did not believe or that wasn't true, I simply overlooked the fact that truth lies not only in what is said, but also in who says it and to whom, why, how, and under what circumstances it is expressed. Thanks to this minor oversight, more precisely, this minor self-deception, what I said came dangerously close, by chance as it were, to what the authorities wanted to hear. What was particularly absurd was the fact that my motive, at least my conscious and admitted motive, was not the hope that it would produce results, but merely a kind of professional, intellectualistic, and somewhat perverse delight in my own, or so I thought, honorable cleverness. I should add, to complete the picture, that when I read it some years later, the honor in that cleverness made my hair stand on end. I sent the request off the following day, and because no one responded to it, and my detention was prolonged again, I assumed it had ended up where such requests usually end up, and I more or less forgot about it. Havel was shocked to be told one day that he was most likely going to be released and political use would be made of his petition. He recounts, "Of course I knew right away what that meant. One, that with appropriate recasting, additions, and widespread publicity, the impression would be created that I had not held out, that I had given in to pressure and backed down from my positions, opinions, and all my previous work. In short, that I had betrayed my cause, all for a trivial reason, to get myself out of jail. Two, no denial or correction on my part would alter that impression because I had undeniably written something that met them halfway, and anything I could add would, quite rightly, seem like an attempt to worm my way out of it. Three, that the approaching catastrophe was unavoidable. Four, that the blot it would leave me on and everything I had taken part in would haunt me for years to come, that it would cause me measureless inner suffering, and that I would probably try to erase it with several years in prison, which in fact happened. But that not even that would rid me entirely of the stigma. Five, that I had no one but myself to blame. I was neither forced to do it, nor offered a bribe. I was not, in fact, in a dilemma, and it was only because I'd unforgivably let down my moral guard that I'd given the other side, voluntarily and quite pointlessly. A weapon that amounted to a heaven-sent gift. The haunting price of self-knowledge is that you always know, or some part of you always knows, exactly what your own moral failures would cost you. All Havel fared would happen is exactly what happened. I came out of prison discredited, to confront a world that seemed to me one enormous, supremely justified rebuke. No one knows what I went through in that darkest period of my life. Weeks, months, years, in fact, of silent desperation, self-castigation, shame, inner humiliation, reproach, and uncomprehending questioning. For a while, I escaped from a world I felt too embarrassed to face, into gloomy isolation, taking masochistic delight in endless orgies of self-blame, And then for a while, I fled this inner hell into frantic activity through which I tried to drown out my anguish and at the same time to rehabilitate myself somehow. His only relative reprieve came when he was thrown into prison again. But it took him years to fully accept his moral failure and wrest from it something larger, something the dream of blamelessness and the performance of perfection could ever secure for the life of the soul. In a testament to the indivisible yin-yang of fortune and misfortune illustrated by the ancient parable of the Chinese farmer, he writes, "I've only now begun fully to realize that the experience wasn't just, from my point of view at least, a comprehensible lapse that caused me a lot of pointless suffering. It had a deeply positive and purgative significance, for which I ought to thank my fate instead of cursing it. It thrust me into a drastic, but for that very reason, crucial confrontation with myself. It shook, as it were, my entire I, shook out of it a deeper insight into itself, a more serious acceptance and understanding of my situation, my horizons, and led me, ultimately, to a new and more coherent consideration of the problem of human responsibility. It is not hard to stand behind one's successes, but to accept responsibility for one's failures, to accept them unreservedly as failures that are truly one's own, that cannot be shifted somewhere else or onto something else, and actively to accept without regard for any worldly interests, no matter how well disguised or for well-meant advice. The price that has to be paid for it, that is devilishly hard. But only thence does the road lead, as my experience, I hope, has persuaded me, to the renewal of sovereignty over my own affairs, to a radically new insight into the mysterious gravity of my existence as an uncertain enterprise and to its transcendental meaning. And only this kind of inner understanding can ultimately lead to what might be called true peace of mind, to that highest delight, to genuine meaningfulness, to that joy of being. If one manages to achieve that, then all one's worldly privations cease to be privations and become what Christians call grace. In the years he spent in prison, Havel learned what it takes to turn suffering into strength and discovered the deepest meaning of hope. Upon his release, he threw himself with redoubled devotion into his political work. Not even a decade into his freedom, the Federal Assembly unanimously elected him president, the last president of Czechoslovakia, after the dissolution of which a free people elected him the first president of the Czech Republic. Many survivors of communist dictatorships, myself included, lament that he was never awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. But the writing he left behind in his letters to Olga is an eternal triumph of peacekeeping for the war within, the war we each wage against ourselves, and in which there are no victors unless we arrive at the kind of peace of mind Havel found on the other side of facing, truly facing, his failure. And that's the end of the article. The soundtrack is Me on the Inside by Ketsa. licensed through ketsa.uk. If you want to learn more about AIRS LA and the types of programs we offer, follow us by clicking on any of the social media links at the top of our web pages. If you like what you see or hear, please click the like button. This podcast is for the sole use of our blind, low vision, and print impaired listeners. Any unauthorized use is prohibited. I'm Emily Mann Sanchez, and I'll be back with another article. Take care, and thanks for listening.